Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast of Burnt Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burntorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodrich. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who loves things being drawn out, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
There's many things that could fit that softball toss-up of an intro you gave me, but I imagine, Gerald, you are talking about how we are, on the 28th recording this, heading into March, still under contract with Vox Media. That's right, folks. We've been extended for a month. Can't get rid of us. This may be a month to month, the way some people do rent for the next 6 years. Who knows? I doubt that's true. But that's the news. That's what it is. We are still incredibly loyal to the Vox Media brand. Thanks, Dad. Big Vox for the paycheck. So yeah, we have another month on the Vox.
Yeah, so we promised you an update last week because, well, we figured this would be the final one that would go up on the podcast feed, but then we got some news and we shifted it back a day because, well, why not, right? So the news is that Vox, due to some logistic things and getting our podcast feed migrated to some insider baseball, has extended the contracts for all of us like a month. So we've got another month as they work to migrate our stuff over. So good news for those of you that are loyal listeners, been with us for a long time, or just new to the podcast and just subscribed. You don't have to do anything. The news from Vox is that we are going to get to keep this feed. If you're subscribed at Burnt Orange Nation, it will transport over to the new thing. We get to keep the Longhorn Republic name, which is great. We do have to change our logo because, well, if you have seen it lately, it is very Burnt Orange Nation themed. But shout-outs to Design Mark F. on Twitter for hooking us up with a new logo. You'll see that here in the next couple of weeks. Guy hooked us up, did some really incredible work, and we're excited. Sick. It's really, really cool. I'm very excited by it.
I might even go as far, Gerald, as to say it is better than our current logo, which we've had for 6 years, 5 years at least. I guess probably since the BON times. But, I mean, for multiple years we've had this logo. I've gotten used to it. But this is an upgrade.
I'm not going to fault you for saying that something that was professionally done is an upgrade from the thing I made in Photoshop from my bed like one afternoon. Like, that's fine. I'm not going to fault you for that. It's okay. But we're not here to talk about graphic design. We're here to talk about some graphic outcomes on the basketball court. Texas
beautiful.
Goes 1-1. Had a chance to close out the conference race. Could not do it. Stomped a mud hole in Iowa State, but then dropped a pretty ugly one to Baylor to keep the conference race kind of spicy for them. Ladies, weirdly enough, same problem. Stomped a mud hole in a team, rival team, which felt great, but couldn't get it done against Baylor. We'll talk about a big baseball matchup happening right tonight as we're recording. Exciting. We love breaking news. And then a lot of championships were won this weekend, Kyle, in the 40 acres. So we've got a golden down the 40, brought to you by a couple of swimming teams who continue to dominate. Obviously, we'll do all our fun burnt orange lenses, Godzilla Tron, bang the drum, all of that fun stuff. But we start on the hardwood. Texas drops one spot in the poll to number 9 after going 1-1 in ranked matchups through the week. Absolutely just beat the tar out of Iowa State 72 to 54. Honestly, was a snuff film for most of that game. Just absolutely incredible. Just beat to death, which is fine. And then had a chance to close out the conference race to just win it outright, but fell to Baylor, 82-71. 11 points feel simultaneously too big, but not big enough to illustrate the weirdness of that game.
Yeah, I mean, look, it looked like they'd found a new strategy instead of just being a second-half team of being a both-halves team. They, you know, like you said, beat the brakes off Iowa State, which all felt right in the world, held Iowa State to, their lowest in point total in Big 12. Tyrese Hunter looked reinvigorated, which was nice, against his old foes after being heckled in Ames pretty mercilessly. But then against Baylor, even though they got out on an early 16-0 run to put them up 18-4, and it looked like, wow, Texas is just going to jump out and just beat people. Baylor had an 18-0 run, and Texas never really got in it. They had their spurts. It was close at half, but in the second half, once Baylor got the lead up to, I think, 17, maybe even 18 at one point, to their credit, Texas fought, got it to single digits. Looked like maybe a couple things could break their way, but Baylor was the better team on this day. I mean, this was tough. They beat Baylor at home. Baylor, in recent history, is not used to losing to Texas basketball. And they seemed like they were really up for this when Baylor did. Texas did some of the things that are part of their winning DNA, right? They had more assists, less turnovers. I think they were 20-15 versus forcing Baylor into that beautiful negative turnover assist to turnover ratio of 12-21. But you saw two key metrics, I think, in this one. Baylor inside out rebounded Texas 37-25, and then free throws, right? Texas shot 12, made 8 of them, which is fine. Baylor shot 29 and made 22 of those, right? That is the entire point differential and then some, just on the free throw line. I'm not trying to say it was a ref show specifically. Texas definitely committed some fouls. It did feel like there were some things that, you know, got some guys in foul trouble. I mean, I said on last week's podcast that I still felt like there was a Tyrese Hunter game in this season, and Tyrese Hunter had two good ones. I said I felt like there was a Dylan Dissou game still to come, and I did not realize that it would be an only Dylan Dissou game. It felt like besides him, no one else really could do anything.
That was weird. Again, we don't want to fault, like, or we don't want to talk down on, like, Tyrese Hunter going 13 in that game. Like, that's normally a line that can get stuff done, but the shooting percentages weren't great for anybody on the team, really, much less Tyrese Hunter, right? This was the worry that we had early in the season. We talked about it, where there's going to be a game or two games where Texas just gets outbodied down low, and that happened, like, 12 rebounds led to second chance points for Baylor. That's a big, big deal, and part of being undersized under the basket is having to kind of get more physical. And so the whistles will be cheaper and they'll be quicker and they'll get to the line. And then they get into the bonus quicker. And then because college basketball, men's college basketball, is the only freaking level of basketball where they play halves instead of quarters, they stay in the bonus and the double bonus for like 15 freaking minutes, it feels like. 15 game minutes, not real minutes, game minutes, which feels like an hour and a half, and it just drags the game out. So those things happen, right? You get into foul trouble when you're undersized down low and you're getting outbodied, and that's what happened with Baylor. Baylor was really physical down low. Baylor outbodied Texas. Texas tried to get physical in return, and the whistles came quick, and that's just kind of part of how Big 12 basketball gets played out. And again, we said it in our season preview. There are going to be games where a team bodies Texas down low and it looks ugly. And that was really the difference against Baylor.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right, too. And it did feel like Texas didn't adjust when they were trying to get physical and the refs just said, nope, you touched him. That's a foul. I think there was at least 5 like rebounding fouls in the second half when the game was, you know, in the teetering between can they make a comeback or is it a blowout? And that didn't help anything, right? Especially when Texas wasn't hitting shots and offensive rebounds would have been key. I mean, look, right? Baylor shot 50% from the field. They had a good night. They shot 47% from deep. They were good. They played a good Baylor game. If you look at Dylan Dissou, he was 10 for 15, shot 67% from the floor, 75% 3 for 4 from deep. If you take him out, the rest of Texas shot 37% and 7 for 23 from deep, 30%. So I think that's it, right? If Texas isn't hitting their shots and they play a team that can go inside and body them, that's a lethal combination. And the refs are calling, you know, when Texas tries to get position, get physical, get maybe a little bit of little bit of arm bar action, whatever it was. But again, like you said, you have to give Tyrese Hunter credit, right, for as many detractors as he's had the past month or 2 months of the season, not just the ones in Ames. He had 15 points followed by in the Iowa State game and followed by 13 points as the second leading scorer against Baylor. Marcus Carr hit a late one to get into double digits. Really, he was more facilitating 6 assists to 1 turnover following the game before that where he had 5 assists. So he is looking like a point guard if he's not the guy scoring, but he didn't have his best shooting night. And we knew that's going to happen. There's going to be those nights. And who is it that steps up, right? If Allen and Rice both struggle, they got 12 in this one, but it wasn't electric. You know, if that happens, we said, who steps up? And it was Dessou. But then they didn't have the defense to capitalize on that, right? I think a Texas team that scores 71 hopes that they might win that game, right? If you hold a team in the 60s, but you certainly give up 82, you're gonna have to score. And Texas didn't have it on the night, and that's unfortunate because, like Gerald said, this was a chance to at least put themselves in a very good position with the final two games remaining, which aren't easy. But it was a road game, as I mentioned. Previous podcast, it's almost impossible to win on the road in the Big 12 in men's basketball. It's legitimately harrowing experience. But Texas failed to do it.
So now they've got to go on the road to pick up a win to keep themselves firmly in the mix. They've got TCU in Funky Fort Worth Wednesday, the day you're listening to this, before hosting number 3, Kansas, on Saturday to end the season. Kansas gets Texas Tech tonight as we're listening to this, and it's not going well for the Red Raiders, which we didn't expect, but that's fine because, you know what, it is playing Kansas at home. It is what it is. And then they've got Texas on Saturday. They're currently a game ahead of Texas in the conference race, so that game on Saturday, if both teams win their respective preambles, will essentially determine the conference race. On the ladies' side, there's a much clearer picture, I think, for them in the conference race. They went 1-1, going to Norman, doing what we love to do, putting the boots to the Oklahoma Sooners, keeping the University of Texas blemishless against the Sooners, 10-0 on the academic year against the Oklahoma Sooners, 67-45, getting a leg up in the conference title race, held Oklahoma 40 points below their scoring average, which is absolutely nuts.
Yeah, OU was averaging 90 over their last 5 in Big 12 play. They've been on fire. And again, Texas held them to half of that, to 45, which is wild. It just goes back to show they're 18-0 when they hold people under 60 points. You know what a Vic team's DNA is, and he knows it as well. They outscored the Sooners big in the second half, 40-22. They had 2 quarters in this game in which they held OU to single digits in the second and fourth quarter both. So great offense on the Texas side for sure, but that trademark defense, I think, is what you saw. Shayla Gonzalez with 19, Roy Harmon, 14 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, put up one of those beautiful box score fillers that she has, in her really sophomore season, become known for, right, as she's become an even better rebounder, even better assist per game than last year where she was stellar and still continuing to score. She's doing it all. Deanna Gaston had a double-double. Shea Holly had 11 second-half points, actually had 11 points just in the third quarter. So you love to see a player get an explosion like that. Shea Holly would be an important player down the stretch for them with her defense and her running and her effort. So seeing her get the ball in the hole as well is a good thing.
This is the time I thought this was going to be a momentum win for them. Like, you don't go to Norman, like the Lloyd Noble Center. I can say this and not feel weird about it. It's like one of the toughest places to play. Like, LNC does it well, especially for the ladies. They love women's sports in Norman. And so going there and smashing OU the way they did is just absolutely wild. And I was like, oh, they might do the dang thing. And then they come home. And again, it was kind of like they felt like they didn't rise to the moment. They had an opportunity to close it out. And if you listen to any of the post game, some players were critical of some of their teammates and the effort that they gave in this game. It snapped a 12 straight their 12-game home winning streak for the ladies. Went 14-2, though, in the inaugural season at home, which is not bad. And also, probably most importantly, we'll talk about this more later, they got 10,000 fans in there, which means that they had 154, actually, pledged to the Neighborhood Longhorns Foundation, Neighborhood Longhorns program, which is absolutely incredible to hear.
Yeah, we'll let Jill talk about that. But it was senior night. They honored seniors Anissa Gutierrez and Femme Masoudi. Not the two, you know, names that jump out, but two players who certainly contributed both to the box score and the culture this season. So it is a reminder that this is a young team, right? Their best players are sophomores and some juniors, right? So this was tough. These two-day turnarounds, especially after the emotional win of traveling to Norman, beating, you know, OU, which is always great, beating OU in theory to you know, put yourself on the fast track for a Big 12 championship that OU doesn't get. I mean, it was an up. And you can do two things. Like Gerald said, you can either ride that all the way through with momentum for the rest of the season, or you can have a little bit of a crash with a two-day turnaround back in Austin. I thought, again, the 10,000 fans at home would have helped them soar. But, you know, to their credit, the team was calling out effort, and you never – Coach Vic, you love him for what he is. He isn't going to change. He's a tough love kind of guy. If you do it right, he will be your biggest ally and biggest fan. He'll still push you and challenge you, but he will call, you know, his team out when they're not giving the effort. And he basically said, you know, if you're not Taylor Jones or Rory Harmon or Shea Holly right now, then your effort isn't where it needs to be heading into the end of the season. So, you know, a call to action. We'll see how they close out. But basically, I mean, Baylor just won this game, right? Same as the men's. Baylor outscored their quarters in the women's game, 3 out of 4. And then the one they didn't, they tied them in the third quarter. So they just won this game, right? Texas shot 35%, 27% from deep. They just didn't have it. Baylor shot 55% in the first half, 44% in the game. They were just putting the ball in the bucket easier. Texas did the thing that they wanted to do. They out-rebounded Baylor with more misses. They were able to get more rebound, 41-35, 18 offensive rebounds, which gave them an 18-6 advantage in second chance points. Like, on a game like that, you say, hey, Texas probably wins that game, right? If they could have gotten a few more stops, if they could have gotten back, they've been getting beat a little bit in transition, which again is an effort thing, right? So if they get back, hustle back, play that brand of Vic defense, they probably still find a way to win this game because they did some things right, even on a poor shooting night, right? That's not an excuse for a Vic coach team. He doesn't, you know, if the ball doesn't go through the hole, we'll just, you know, take more shots, get steals, get turnovers, play defense, limit their possessions, and keep trying and get the rebounds and put it back up. You know, he has a plan for when the ball's not going through. It's tough to win, but, you know, I think he felt very much that they could have and probably should have sealed the championship in this one.
I mean, Vic Schaefer is, and I'm gonna say this, I think Vic Schaefer is a lot of what Chris Beard wants to be, where it's like, I coach you hard and I love and I hold you accountable, but I do it because I love you and I care about you. I think like Vic Schaefer does it in a way that probably may rub people the wrong way, but I think it's absolutely what has worked for him in his career. But I think Baylor forced Texas into some bad shots and Texas couldn't hit him. And that's normally how Texas wins these games, because yeah, you know, you look at Texas's record, and this is your stat, Kyle, but I'm going to steal it. Like, when Texas holds teams below 60, they're undefeated, 18-0 on the year, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, Baylor forced Texas to take bad shots. Texas took bad shots, and Texas missed bad shots. That is basketball in a nutshell. And so mm-hmm. Baylor did it well for them and kept Texas from clinching the conference.
And a couple just additional things on that, right? It's defense, defense, defense. When they hold teams, like you said, below 60, it's 18-0. But when they allow more than 60, it's 4-8. It's you know, it's pretty stark. They don't win shootouts. Not this team. They're not built that way. They rank 10th in the NCAA in turnovers forced per game, 8th in the NCAA in block shots per game. They hold a 382-200 advantage over opponents in points off turnovers. That is how they get offense, is through defense. I mean, that's 182 points. That's a lot of wins right there. My favorite stat, right? To Vic praised Harmon in giving his team a call to action. Rory, who had another good one, 12.7 rebounds, 7 assists, did what she did, which is everything. She also leads the team in fouls drawn on the offensive side with 119 of those, and charges taken, which I love that. I love that stat when your superstar is leading your team in charges taken. In the Big 12 alone, she's played 40 minutes 9 times. Rory is you can never question her heart, right? She may not be the biggest person on the court. That's probably Taylor Jones, who had 8 blocks this week and across 2 games. She's great. And she's another one Vic praised for her effort. But Rory certainly has the heart of an absolute lion. And so, you know, I hope Rory herself, a sophomore who's become the team leader, you know, certainly one of the best players in the country, calling the team out is the thing. If it's not Vic, then it's, hey, that's my teammate calling me out, and we'll see something a little bit different, because it's theirs to win. The home stretch is they control their own destiny to an extent, and then, you know, the Big 12 tournament and ultimately the March tournament. So can this be a call to action to close out and get right for the end when a big team likes to come together?
Yeah, so this is what it is. Texas has one game left on the year. They're taking on Kansas State, 5-11 in conference. Those Wildcats, not great. And if they win that game, they'll at least have a share of the conference title. OU for their trouble has that same Kansas State, so we may chalk both of those up as W's for either team. So really, it may come down to Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Bedlam on Saturday will likely determine if Texas has an outright conference championship or a share of a conference championship.
And let me just say, Gerald, Kansas State is led by the Big 12 second highest scorer, Gabby Gregory, who may just be a sleeper agent. Where did she transfer from after a tough injury laden junior year, but a stellar freshman and sophomore year? That's right, from Oklahoma, has gone to Kansas State to put herself in this position to basically determine where OU and Texas finish in conference. It's a novel written deep in the Sooner message boards, but hopefully Texas can get past the sleeper OU agent, who's probably the comeback player of the year in, you know, at least the Big 12, if not the entire country this year, scoring, leading her team all over the place after coming back from some bad injuries last year.
Not for the first time tonight. Breaking news. Texas, after taking LSU scoreless into the ninth, falls to the number one team in the country, 3-0. Texas was coming off of a 3-1 week. They got a 12-2 win over Texas A&M Corpus Christi, had a 2-1 weekend series win over Indiana, in which they scored 11 runs over 3 games and then couldn't manage to put a single one across the plate against the Tigers. But the pitching looks solid against what's probably not even arguably, but the number one offensive lineup in the country, probably. I think you can make a case for that. LeBaron Johnson had himself a night, but unfortunately, the bullpen did not pull their weight.
Yeah, this is kind of a live react. I will say, a little inside baseball about the baseball. We paused our recording of this podcast to go watch, because it's like, man, this thing is tied in the ninth. We got to see this. And I turned, we'd been watching via the stats broadcast, but I turned on the game on the exact pitch that an LSU player launched a ball 400 and some odd feet over the Texas left center field. So that's on me, guys. There is a theory, a working theory, that at least tens of folks on the internet are spouting, that maybe all the problems with Texas sports are me. They're related to me. Maybe they're all my fault. And that feels likely. That tracks. It sucked. I do feel terrible that was the first thing I saw. But yeah, Gerald, it's a little bit of a trend. There's a couple things, watch points so far in this season. First of all, incredible gutsy performance to get it to the 9-0-0, holding them, you know, down. LBJ pitch 5, looking great. 9 strikeouts, 3 hits through there. The bullpen actually did okay getting to the ninth. Back-to-back walks to open it up. They did have struggled a little bit with walks today, which, again, when a lineup's that good, I guess you're over-pitching a little bit to not give them anything, you know, to crush, which happened there. To his credit, Duplantia came back and fanned the next two guys. He responds better to giving up a home run than anyone I know. I just wish it didn't take the home run to get to the good stuff. I don't know. Look, LSU's a really, really, really good team this year. It's a Tuesday night. Anything can happen. It's you know, would have loved to win that one. Would have really, really loved to win that one, especially with the way the season has started and going 0-3 to start, right? That would have been a statement game for the rest of the season. But I think there's some really fun spots on this team. The starting pitching has been pretty good all year, honestly. You know, downtown Porter Brown is a guy who's quickly becoming a cult hero, 3 home runs already. I just think this is a young team, and we said it in our preview. A young team is going to break your heart. You know, they're going to lose some heartbreakers. They're going to lose some ones that you just think, how did you throw that away? Or, oh, how did you make that play or not make that play? Base running, errors. We've seen some of those things crop their head up. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's the number one. No one thought they would win this game coming in against the number one team who's in great form with a Texas team that's struggling. So good effort, good showing. I hate morale victories. Again, moral victory is not a thing. It's a morale victory. you know, to take it to 9 was something better than all of us expected. So fortunate just to always be the bridesmaid, never the bride there and not just finish it. But it's all right. All in all, on the week, look, they got their first series win after a tough start, got the easy midweek win. Say easy, but that was LBJ also getting the win there over the CC Aggies. 12 hits, 12 runs, 16 hits, no errors in that one. Freshman Jalen Flores getting his first home run. I mean, not a bad week, all things considered. Would have been great if they basically swept for the weekend, won the midweek, and then had a great showing against LSU. That would be probably the ideal week. But, you know, still good. Like I said, once they get past LSU, there's probably only like 2 or 3 they should lose or might lose coming up. They may lose more than that, but they should be favored in most of the games going forward as they get to the easy part of the schedule.
The good of this game is, right, the pitching staff held LSU to its lowest offensive output of the year, right? The bad is that Texas had its lowest offensive output of the year. So it's like, yes, there's good to point at. Yes, obviously we don't want Texas to win. But, like, I mean, LSU's pitching staff, there's a reason why LSU is the number one team in the country, right? They've got a phenomenal pitching staff. They got a phenomenal lineup. And, like, that's what they did. They gutted it out. It was kind of a who blinks first. And, unfortunately, Texas blinked first in this one, right? They strategically walked Dylan Campbell. Downtown Porter Brown didn't get it done on the base for Texas this game. His last time out, like, or I guess on Friday, scored 3 runs, like hit a 3-run home run on Friday. Again, we need to celebrate people with the nickname Downtown, but he couldn't get it done on Tuesday. So, like, it's tough for, like, again, there's no such thing as, like, good losses. Losses are losses. We don't remember at the end of the year whether or not it was a close loss. It was just a loss. But, like, after getting absolutely housed by the SEC, I mean, Texas is still 0-4 against this future conference, but it feels a lot better than I did maybe on Sunday of 9 days ago when Vanderbilt absolutely took Texas to the woodshed.
Yeah, I agree. Again, one thing to watch on the error count, basically, they went 0 in their you know, good win on Friday. That Friday game was great, right? Coming back, getting the, not quite walk-off, but the 8th inning 3-run homer that sealed the deal with 0 errors. 0 errors against the CC Aggies. But then you saw it creep up a little bit. 1 error on Saturday, 2 on Sunday. Just 1 against LSU, but again, we really want to clean it up. We knew there'd be stuff after a legendary defense had to replace everyone. But base running Sunday was just bad. Like, botched hit and runs, some things that just didn't look right. Made, you know, Indiana's catcher look like Pudge Rodriguez there on Sunday. Cleaned up a little bit against LSU. It wasn't like, I would say they just base ran themselves out of a win. But just a couple things to watch. Again, a young team. We said it in our preview. We've said it. We'll say it certainly a dozen more times. Young team, growing pains. They're going to learn some things. It's a long, long, long season. They can learn some habits. Hopefully they're good habits, because if they can get it going, there's a lot of talent on this team. There's some gaps, and there's certainly, you know, a couple things to watch: the bullpen, the fielding, the base running, and being able to string together hits consecutively. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on this team. We still like their upside, but, you know, we knew it was going to be a big hill to climb.
Young team replacing essentially all of a record-setting offense and defense, going to be shaky, but Texas has a chance to get it back, going to California, heading to the West Coast to take on Cal State Fullerton in a weekend series before coming home to host Sam Houston in your Tuesday midweek game. So that's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we pop some champagne, downing the 40. Let's start in the pool, Kyle, because they won some championships Number two, women's swimming won its 11th straight Big 12 championships. All have come under the captain, Cale Capitani, the myth, the legend. 20 of 21 events this weekend. Absolutely incredible. The men did the same thing, 20 of 21 events. But for them, multiply that record by four, 44 consecutive conference title under Eddie Reese, 65 of those bad boys in school history.
I think I do think it gets a little bit lost. Like, we'll take a moment. This will be, we don't always wax poetic on the goat of goats, Eddie Reese, the greatest college coach of any sport in history, right? Like, there is no one as dominant in their field, maybe at anything ever, as Eddie Reese is at coaching men's swimming. 1980 to 2023 is a long time. Like, there have been many presidents. There have been people who've had kids and grandkids in that span. I don't know, maybe great kid, probably not great grandkids. But it's, you know, it's a long time. Eddie Reese is a freaking legend. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think it gets enough, even though there's the joke that Texas is a swimming school. Like, yeah, unironically, we're a swimming school. Like, we are as good at men's swimming as any program in the country is at anything ever. They are UConn women's basketball at their height, but for four decades. They are Alabama football, but, you know, 10 times as long and with more national championships and certainly more conference championships. Like, it is a little bit absurd to think about, and we just need to take a chance. And again, Cale Capitani should be getting all the praise, but unfortunately her record looks so small compared to Eddie's just unbreakable, unbelievable record that no one in any sport will ever come close to touching whenever he does finally, for real, retire. But just a quick couple call-outs. Texas set a lot of Big 12 meet records, 100 breast, Lydia Jacoby, Olivia Brissett, two in the 100 fly, 200 back, the 400 free relay and 800 free relay all on the women's side, and then Carson Foster set two meet and conference records in the 200 and 400. IM. So some good swims before they head into the big ones to the natties for both teams, who are ranked number two and number three, respectively.
Jimmy Carter, the president, the last time the University of Texas men's swimming team did not win a conference championship. That's right, Jimmy Carter. The track team, after a strong season on the ladies' side, or the men's side, were unable to close it out. They fell to Oklahoma State, number 23, narrowly. They set some records in what turned out to be a losing effort on both sides. The men finished third after, again, winning the last two. They're hoping for their third consecutive, but were unable to close it out.
Yeah, the women were looking for their sixth, which would be a Big 12 record, sixth consecutive. The men looking for their third, which would have been a third straight sweep, which would have been a record. So unfortunate they weren't able to get either. On the men's side, look, they knew it was going to be an uphill battle. Tech is number three in the country this year, and they were the hosts, and they took the title. So, you know, the men's was a little bit less surprising than the women. The usual suspects were all very good on the women's side. Julian Alfred continued her historic season, breaking the 7-second barrier in the 60-meter dash, ran a 6.97. Just a reminder, it's the third time this season Alfred has broken her own NCAA collegiate record while becoming the eighth fastest human being in the history of that, and the only collegiate athlete to ever run under 7 seconds. So just wild. She also, just for record, set a UT program record in the 200 with a 22.26 there, the third fastest in college history. So she's awesome, and we knew she was awesome, and she did what she did. Rossi Adeleke won with a then college record in the 400. Someone from Florida broke it 90 minutes later, so she has the second fastest time in the history of college in the 400. So both of the two stars of this program did what they did. Some other people won the events we expected them to win. I think there was just Oklahoma State kind of came out of nowhere and really had an incredible showing. So kudos to them. I don't know that Texas lost it as much as Oklahoma State went out and just won it. So a really interesting storyline. You don't necessarily in track always see upsets like that. But on the men's side, you know, you saw the distance where Carroza, Yusuf Bizmana, you know, they had some great performances from their great performers, just didn't have the depth. I think needed one or two more All-American level athletes to get him a couple more points. But for his credit, Yusuf Bizimana won the 600 with the third fastest time in NCAA history, moved to number three on the Texas list there. So Texas, the events they own, man, they own them. In the entire country, no one's close. They just need probably one or two more events on each side, which, you know, Coach Flo will certainly be thinking about as they head to outdoors.
I'm excited to see them get back at it in outdoors again. I think there's a direct correlation between Paperis and conference championships on indoor track. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But outdoor season, right around the corner.
Little Paperi did get 6 points in his shot throw. So, yeah, you know, we still have one. We just you know, maybe he's not the biggest one.
Remember, don't call him that to his face. Softball goes 3-1 on the week at the Lone Star Invitational. Lost to number 10 Virginia Tech in the opener 6-5. Then beat Virginia Tech 8-2 on Saturday. Abilene Christian 8-0 in 5. And then honestly, I feel bad for Texas Southern 22-0 in the fifth. Like, we could have probably called that a little bit earlier, maybe. I don't know. He's already dead.
I don't know if there is a four run when maybe there's a flag a coach can wave. It was ugly. We'll start in reverse order. 22-0 was a phenomenal win all around. Satali Gutierrez, who we talked about, has just been electric, honestly, after their other loss of the season against the top 10 team by one run, right, to against Northwestern. She got the loss there, but she's been lights out for the freshman. She threw a no-hitter in this one. She became the 16th Longhorn in program history to throw a no-hitter, struck out 9 of the 16 batters she faced. The reason she faced 16 and not 15 was a pass ball on a strikeout. The only person that kept her from a perfect game, which is even more rare, of course, the last one being Miranda Eilish, was a pass ball strikeout. So she was just absolutely on fire. They also set a program record with 23 hits in this one, and 22 runs was just one shy of a program record. A couple people that stood out this weekend: Viviana Martinez finished 8 of 13 with 10 RBIs in 4 games. Leanne Good, who came in with a 10-game hit streak, sadly saw it fall in the first game of the weekend. Ended at 10 games, which is, again, the program record for a hit streak to start your career at Texas. But she picked it right back up, and the next game she's now on a 3-game hit streak. And her whole career has, you know, maybe that's what we'll say. Her whole career, she got a hit every game but one. Who knows? But she was all over in this one, driving in 6 against Texas Southern, and was just a triple shy of the cycle. For her credit, Mia Scott extended hers to 14 out of 14, her hit streak, 14 games. She's been on fire as well. I think right now, the last I looked at it, Texas has 3 out of the top 5, or maybe even 4 out of the top 6 hits leaders in the Big 12. So they've started out putting the ball in play. They haven't, you know, they've got a few home runs, but they're just putting the ball all over the park in play in their opening ones. And again, to go back to the beginning and the top of the weekend, that 5-6 loss to a top 10 team to Virginia Tech, their only losses so far this season through 14 games are 2 of them to a top 10 team by one run. And Virginia Tech was a crazy comeback walk-off from Virginia Tech to even get there. So this softball team is looking good.
Yeah, I mean, stop me if you heard this before. The Big 12, going to be nasty. Softball this time. Not baseball, not basketball, not football. Softball. Next up for them, they've got North Texas, who's just outside of the top 25, before hosting not the Lone Star Invitational, but the Longhorn Invitational against Princeton, McNeese, Tennessee State, and number 24, Louisiana, Ragin' Cajuns, coming to Austin.
I can't imagine a group that I would more like to see have a conversation around a table than a Princeton grad, two Louisiana folks from McNeese and Louisiana, and then Tennessee State. Throw a Longhorn in the mix and it gets wild, but just what a pairing of four. I just want to be there for the intellectual banter. Go on, Gerald.
I'm proud of whoever put this set of schools together. Moving on to the Lynx. Number 8 women's golf has some more time left in the Darius Rucker Intercollegiate, but they're up to 4th place after 2 rounds in a field that includes 11 top 25 teams, 4 of which are in the top 10. On the men's side, number 15 men's golf finishes 2nd in the Southern Highlands Collegiate in Vegas. Who goes to Vegas to play golf? That seems terrible, right? No. So there were 2 strokes off the winner, Illinois, who shot absolutely just dumb 11 under on the last day to win a 21 under. Again, the field, this was a stacked group, nine top 25 teams, including five in the top 10. So Texas coming out second, not a bad outing for the Horns.
Agree. This should probably move them into the top 10, I would think. And it was mainly led by freshmen, right? Christian Moss fired his collegiate best 6 under in the first round, played well throughout the entire week, and was second in the individual standings. I think he was also 2 strokes away from taking the top honor there. And then Tommy Morrison, who we've talked a lot about, and he lived up to the hype in his first true debut, right? He did play in Hawaii with a canceled tournament, but in his first three-day tournament, finished 9th at 7 under in his full debut. Looks big in many ways, but the other two freshmen, Keaton Vo, Jacob Sosa, both in the top 25, as well as grad transfer Brian Stark, also in the top 25. Vic, outside of the top 25, probably was the difference in this one. And you just hope that he comes in the clutch and kind of can get consistent here for the run in. But this is a top 10 team, and it looks like it. And it's really, again, freshman-led. I just want to point out, Gerald, who wants to play golf in Vegas? Who wants to play golf in South Carolina? I mean, literally, these are bachelor party golf destinations on either coast that our men's and women's team are getting to partake in. And again, Darius Rucker intercollegiate is one of my favorite sporting events on the calendar.
Not just because we can make fun jokes about it. Number 2, men's tennis beat number 40, Texas A&M, as it should be, 5-2. Texas won the doubles point in 4 singles matches, clinching at 4-1 on their way to a 4th straight win in the series. They take a week off before traveling to Stanford to take on number 24, those darn trees. And on the ladies' side, they took on the trees, falling 5-2. Stanford has 4 top 100 ranked singles players, which probably helped them a little bit in this one.
Yeah, I think Stanford is a candidate based on that to really skyrocket up the rankings. UT will probably fall a little bit, hopefully not too far outside the top 10, because they've had a solid season. They just don't have the top heaviness that they've had in the past, but Stanford has the number 5, number 20, number 25, and number 72 ranked singles players. That doesn't, to me, sound like a top 22 team. That sounds like a top 12 team. So I could see Stanford moving up the next couple weeks, but to her credit, junior Taisia Pachkaleva.
You said it.
TP, as I forever will call her, earned victories in both singles and doubles. So, you know, just need the team to get on that momentum for their next one coming up when they are in the H.
How would you feel about going TYP in honor of Michael Jackson's real goat, PYT? I said it. There you go. PYT, probably my favorite Michael Jackson song.
Dirty Diana. It's a rare one. It's not a common pick, but that's me.
It's a good one. But speaking of nothing we just talked about, Texas heading to Houston to take on Rice on Saturday.
All right, Gerald. Now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses, keeping it on the hard court. Elliot Spazieri named the MOP of those indoor nationals. I think this came out just between our shows, but named to the all-tournament team. Texas finishing runner-up there. Unfortunately, there were a lot of horned frogs on that team, but none above Elliot Spazieri, who took the MOP as the number one singles player. He is on a Peyton Stearns-type trajectory this year, and I say that because Peyton Stearns was on hand for the Stanford match to be honored as the 2022 Honda Award winner for women's tennis. Remind you that she was the NCAA singles champion, a 3-time All-American in both singles and doubles, 2022 Big 12 Player of the Year, and the Big 12 Championship MOP. She's a GOAT as well. Now on the professional circuit against Spazieri, doing that on the men's side, and you love to see it. You love to see both of these teams have national championship aspirations basically alternating years. I can take that. I can handle that. Just 1 year men win it, next year women win it, next year men. Yeah, that's fine. I'm perfectly fine with that rotation.
One logistic question, Kyle. She won the Player of the Year award, right? So she qualifies now for a retirement of something. What do they retire for a tennis player? Is it the visor? Is it a wristband? Like, what do they retire for a tennis? Maybe our tennis baggage handler, Rick, can weigh in on this one.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a real racket, whatever it is. No, yeah. For you know, for is it the shoes? You know, is it because, you know, I think people fail to realize the more than almost any athlete in any sport, the shoe in tennis, right? You're doing so much quick lateral movement, so much planting and lunging, where, you know, like if you had a Zion Williams event going on where he blew out the Nike against North Carolina, you know, that could ruin a career. May have done so for Zion, but tennis, they rely on the shoes. So I'm going to go with maybe the shoe.
I'm down with it. I like it. Retire the shoes. Do it, Del Conte.
Gerald, this one hasn't happened yet, but the news is still exciting because the dynasty is finally starting. The new super team, the Phoenix Suns, will officially have a Kevin Durant as a part of their already great team. He will expected to make his Suns debut the day you're listening to this against Charlotte and the Fighting Michael Jordans. So KD certainly had to get back in time there. Remember, it's 2023. It's your Jordan year. So, you know, go out and make it great. Same to you, Kevin Durant.
He's one for one on super teams. Let's see how this one works out.
Yeah, I love it. Something I don't love as much, but if you're plugged in, probably not the biggest surprise in the world. 2023 four-star cornerback Jaden Allen officially decommitted from Texas, opened his recruiting back up. Gerald, tell us a little bit about this and what rippling effects maybe it could mean.
Yeah, so Jaden Allen is one of those early members of the recruiting class, and it's hard to hold on to a recruitment that long. Those early commitments, I do not ever set my watch to them. This is like the second one of those really early commitments to decommit from that class. He's a stud corner. I mean, Alabama, Georgia are all knocking on his door. I think some of this may have to do, and I'm curious to see how this plays out, but BJ Allen is his older brother. He was a member of a previous recruiting class, and he hasn't really, like, he didn't even push for, like, time on special teams this year, so I'm curious to see if this has any, if we're reading too many tea leaves or if this is something specific, and maybe BJ is also looking for greener pastures.
We shall see. Like you said, there's plenty of time in this class to make up, and we may just have some good news to talk about in that class very, very soon. We'll talk about that one in just a moment. Gerald, for now, let's take it home with our final two segments, starting with Godzillatron. What have you been watching on your giant screen?
So a little bit of watching, a little bit of reading. So I mentioned this several weeks ago, but I started reading a graphic novel or a comic series called Once in Future. It's a little bit of a weird premise, but essentially these British nationalists are trying to make Britain great again, and they're trying to do so by resurrecting King Arthur. And so all sorts of weirdness happens, and it's kind of a monster of the week kind of situation, a little bit. I'm enjoying it. It's fun. It's, like, dumb. I don't have to think about it a lot, but it's funny and, like, got relatable characters. And obviously, like, Netflix owns the rights to, like, all of the Boom comics is what this, like, comic imprint is called. So, like, Netflix is sitting on money because the things that make them a ton of money are, like, supernatural shows, like Stranger Things and the British Monarchy. Like, those two things that print money for Netflix, right? Downton Abbey, The Crown, right? Like, Bridgerton. Like, just get on it. Make this show. It'll make you a ton of money. It'll be super fun. And then I was looking for, like, a show to watch in the background that I don't have to pay attention to. And anybody that follows me on Twitter knows I've said this before. The CW Monster of the Week show, Supernatural, is actually one of my all-time favorite don't-have-to-think shows. I have argued that the first 5 seasons of Supernatural are serialized TV at its peak. Like, it is just, like, they do enough of, like, the overarching meta story in every episode. There's, like, 1 or 2 lines about it, maybe a conversation about it, but then it's very, like, insular into the episode. It's, like, made to be syndicated on TNT, which is what it does now. They had 15 seasons of the show. I stopped after 5 because that's when, like, the original showrunner left and, like, they concluded the original story arc. And so I'm big on, like, jumping off of a show when, like, they've completed the actual, like, story arc. So I've got, like, a year or two's worth of watching this in the background while I do work. So it's going to be interesting to check it out.
Supernatural became the longest running American live action fantasy TV series in its 11th season. Then it did 4 more. I have never watched it. Is Jeffrey Dean Morgan part of that original cast? Is he, like, in a lot of them?
Yeah, okay, first season shows up quite a bit.
Then I will never watch it with my wife because she's a big fan of Jeffrey Dean Morgan. So we will not be watching that.
Sterling K. Brown also shows up. Early career Sterling K. Brown. Mrs. Carpenter might just leave you.
I mean, Sterling K. Brown is a handsome devil. You know, that one might be as much for me. He's a fantastic actor as well. All right, so I watched the kind of opposite. I went high drama, serialized documentary. I've talked about it before on this podcast. I think Formula One's Drive to Survive on Netflix is this really, really fascinating phenomenon. I think it is single-handedly responsible for growing that sport in a way that I don't know any specific media outside maybe like the FIFA video game series for soccer in their American fandom, right? That might be the only analog there. It is a great, great, great show. I prefer it to the live seasons. My wife, you know, is super into cars and will wake up and watch F1 races or at least certainly keep up with the events each week. I don't even care. Like, I'll kind of keep the general storylines. I'm saving it all up for when the season comes out, and it did come out this weekend, and we binged the entirety of it, all of season 5 of F1 Drive to Survive. It is fantastic, as always, right? Season 4 ends on a crazy real-life drama. You feel like this is the point in the series, in the kind of hero story arc, where Max Verstappen, who is absolutely the villain of the sport, he's the worst. If you think otherwise, tweet at me and let me know, but you're wrong. Max Verstappen takes over the throne, and we're right now at the point where the hero is outcast, and Lewis Hamilton has, you know, lost his superpowers, and now he has to train with some dark shadow ninja somewhere in some nether regions, but will certainly make a comeback. Or maybe Ferrari will. I don't mind Ferrari at all if they can just get their stuff together. But anyways, it's a really just phenomenal show that gives super millionaire drivers and super billionaire owners like personality in a way that's very interesting. It's just a great show. Like, if you haven't watched it, and my first round of recommendations didn't do it for you, it's in season 5, and I still like binge the whole thing in a day to 3 days when it comes out because it's so good. But we finished all of that, and on Sunday still had a bit of time. Somehow, this was our kind of lazy do stuff around the house weekend as well. And it recommended the Netflix next show. It recommended was called Full Swing, which is the same exact thing. Netflix is like, wait, this works for us. Instead of betting on live sports, they're betting on high drama, well shot, you know, after the fact released serialization of a season, edited for the most dramatic effect. And they did this with the PGA Tour, and it happens to be the year that LIV Golf started, so it's, you know, super drama. But I only watched the first two episodes, and I will say the first two are very Longhorn-centric. The first episode focuses on the relationship between Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, and the second episode, you know, starts kind of showing Koepka, but then really focuses on the rise of Scottie Scheffler. So if the show is basically just an hour each of singing the praise of the University of Texas golf alumni, then sign me up. When's that Ben Crenshaw or Tom Kite episode coming, homie? But no, I'm sure they look at other players, which probably won't be as fun, but you know, so far, two episodes in, it's great. We've had the UT band playing at the Austin F1 event and a lot of Longhorn iconography, and then we have two UT golfers. So that's the way I like to spend my Netflix sports documentary weekend, is just basically with burnt orange lenses.
Now is the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
Gerald, the NFL draft is sneaking up on us. It's basically 2 months. Well, I guess today's the 28th when we're recording this. You'll hear it on the 1st, but yeah, give or take, 2 months away. It is right around the corner. This is the fun draft season where, you know, people are talking themselves out of people, talking themselves into people. You know, combines will come shortly. Numbers will make certain people darlings. The camps are going. The interviews are happening. People are falling in love, right? And we know there is a running back that is just the talk of the town. You know, a phenomenal high school player who came to the University of Texas, carried the ball many, many times, many touchdowns to great aplomb. Of course, I'm talking about Longhorn legend Roschon Johnson. You may have thought Bijan Robinson there, and he himself is a legend, and he will do great. But Roschon's turning some heads. A player who we all knew as Longhorn fans was a phenomenal human being, an incredible team first, do it all. I will block, I will catch passes, I will, you know, do literally whatever is needed for my team to win football games. A player who has all the tools, who has all the heart, who is one of, you know, just a natural leader, who changed his position from quarterback to running back in order to serve the team, and ultimately ended up serving himself, because he is rising up draft boards. You know, he, I think, started, you may have seen projections, he was somewhere like, you know, late, can someone take a flyer on him in round 5? Or, you know, is he the top, one of the top 20 running backs? And now people are talking about he might be somewhere in the 6 to 8 range of running backs taken, right? Like, which is wild that Bijan will almost certainly, well, no, almost, will certainly be the number one running back and maybe a top, you know, as high as like 15 pick. But Roshan is so good, and his looks so good, and he's doing the things in pass protection and doing the things in you know, camps and interviews right now as he's going around, and just winning fans left and right. And it's no surprise, if you know Roshan Johnson, we said that way back when, that as soon as he got to the interview phase and GMs talked to him, they would fall in love with this kid, because he's a guy who you can, you know, have on your team for 6 years. He will lead. If it's the special teams unit, he'll be the voice and captain of the special teams unit. If he's getting carries, he's going to be dependable. If you put him in on pass pro, which is honestly the biggest money maker for rookie running backs to get drafted, right? If you can do that thing where you can play all downs immediately, he might be the best, you know, pass blocking running back in this class. He does all the things, and he's, you know, has the heart, determination, motivation, and mindset of a champion. And I'm excited to see the rest of the country find out.
Easily the best, most heralded player out of PNG, right? Like 12,000 yards, like 160 touchdowns in 3 years as their quarterback. Like, in. Would have been well within his rights to try to battle it out at quarterback. Tim Beck brought him in for a reason. He would have gone into a tough situation, would have sat behind Sam for 2 years, but instead, I think he made a team first decision. He also probably realized he could see the field quicker and maybe make a place for himself. But like, I love seeing a guy get rewarded for making that type of selfless decision. So absolutely incredible. So I'm banging the drum this week on Texas fans getting out to support the ladies and how that turned out for the Neighborhood Longhorn program. Again, we talked about it in the women's section, but 10,000 fans showed up. And so there was originally $10,000 on the line from Vic Schaefer's pocket. Turned out a lot of folks matched him. He had 5 donors match his $10,000 mark, and then some other smaller donors got it up to more than $150,000 for the Neighborhood Longhorn program. And the if you don't know about what the NLP is, it is a program that is designed to help kids in lower income areas of Austin have some academic advantages, get them into reading programs, and actually can turn into some scholarship money for them if they complete it. Basically, they get a scholarship savings account for every year of the program that they can complete, and so they can end up with a semester or two worth of money saved up for their college education. So I just think it's awesome that, like, the fan base and the coaches and there were business people and professors somehow that were dropping 10K for this, but absolutely incredible to see just this type of community engagement. Like, I absolutely love to see it. And it's just speaks to the character of a guy, of Coach Schaefer, to kick this off and the community at large really getting behind it and supporting such an awesome thing.
Yeah, what starts here changes the world. I would have loved to see that translate to, you know, them clinching the championship on senior night, but it was phenomenal just to see 10,000 fans come out to women's sporting event in the mood. And again, great cause to get people there, but also just an incredible cause that they're choosing to support. So you win every way except the game, I guess, but I'll take it. It's a bigger win, which matters a lot more, the impact off the court. So very, very cool.
And that's all we got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week, still on the Burn Orange Nation podcast feed. Thank you so much for being a part of it. Again, if you haven't subscribed, do so you can go with us whenever the transition does happen. And until then, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Texas's RBU. We'll be right back.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.